Well, you know, every parent wants to do a good job. Every parent wants to be a super dad or a super mom. But understand, these Cape Crusaders don't exist. Though I wanted to be a super dad, I've spent a lot of my time feeling like a super dud. Being a parent is the most difficult task you'll ever tackle. I was once told, you should have realized that anything that began with the term labor was not going to be easy. Parenting kids is certainly a challenge. Reminds me of the mom who came home from the hospital with triplets. Her 4-year-old daughter took one look at her new siblings and she shouted, "Boy, we better start calling folks. They're going to be a lot harder to give away than the kittens." Trust me, they're a lot harder to raise than kittens. Parenting is a tough gig. You thought a parent's job was to help their children grow up, but often it's the children who cause the parents to grow up. Sometimes we parents learn more from our kids than our kids learn from us. I brought with me today a top 10 list. I'm kind of fond of top 10 lists. If you're a regular here at Calvary Chapel, you know that. And here are the top 10 things that I learned from my kids that I didn't really want to know. The top 10 things I learned from my kids that I didn't really want to know. Number 10, a 4-year-old's voice is louder than 200 adults in a crowded restaurant. Number 9, when you throw a baseball into a spinning ceiling fan, the blades can hit the ball a long way and generate enough force to break a double pane window. Number 8, when you hear the toilet flush and the words, "Uh-oh, it's already too late." Number 7, Legos will pass through the digestive tract of a 3-year-old human being. You may not have known that, but you learn that if you're a parent. Number 6, the words Play-Doh and microwave should never be used in the same sentence. Number 5, MacGyver reruns can teach a child many things he doesn't really need to know. Number 4, sliced cheese melts in DVD players. Number 3, marbles or rocks in a gas tank will make lots of noise. Number 2, the spin cycle on a washing machine does not make earthworms dizzy. It will, though, make a cat dizzy, and a dizzy cat will throw up twice its body weight. All information you didn't really want to know. And last, but definitely not least, quiet does not necessarily mean everything is okay. Did you hear about the 3 moms who were bragging to each other about their successful sons? The first mom boasted, "Well, my son is a big city lawyer. For my birthday, he bought me a diamond ring." Well, the second mom, she said, "You know, my son is a medical doctor. Last winter, he paid for my vacation in the Bahamas." Well, the third mom, not to be outdone, she chimed in, "My son is so rich, he can afford to visit a fancy psychiatrist once a week. He pays $250 an hour, and that's not all. He spends the whole time talking about me." I think the secret desire of most parents is to parent their children in such a way that they don't end up the subject of a future conversation with a psychiatrist. If you feel a little inadequate as a parent, here again, the Word of God and the Spirit of God comes to our rescue. For God doesn't call us to do what He won't empower us to do. It's His promise. His power comes with His promises. You can parent your child effectively. You can. God has given you a purpose, and He's given you tools to accomplish that purpose. And tonight, we're going to find that He's even told us those things to avoid. We've been talking about a PTA, a parent's purpose, a parent's tools, and tonight we're going to talk about a parent's avoidances. Let's read again our text, Ephesians chapter 6, verses 1 through 4. Paul writes, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with you and you may live long on the earth. And then to parents, you fathers, Do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. You see, the child's duty becomes the parent's purpose. We should teach our children, let's hear it together, obedience and respect. And we do it with two tools. A parent's tools are the training and the admonition of the Lord, discipline and encouragement, the rod and the apple. But that's not all Paul tells us, for he also gives us a parent's avoidances. For in verse 4, he tells us, both mothers and fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath. The Greek word translated provoke, it means to anger or to frustrate our kids. Other versions render it, don't embitter, don't irritate, don't exasperate, don't nag, don't vex, don't goad, don't overcorrect, don't be hard on. The Amplified Version, I love the Amplified Version, it puts it, fathers, do not irritate or provoke your children to anger. Do not exasperate them to resentment. See, you can bring up a child in the training and admonition of the Lord. You can give your child a rod and an apple, those warm hugs, and that wooden spoon. You can give them the encouragement and the discipline that we discussed last night. But if you needlessly frustrate your children, you can create in them a resentment that will undermine all the good that you're doing. Even well-meaning parents can make little mistakes that will provoke their kids. You see, to provoke a child is to needlessly irritate that child. And the key word there is needlessly. I once polled my oldest two kids, what do your mom and dad do that irritates you most? Here were their answers. You spank us. You make us go to the grocery store. You wake us up early for school. You don't give us Coca-Cola when we want it. You make us go to bed too early. But you see, these are necessary irritations that one day they'll appreciate. My question is, how do we needlessly needle our children? How do we pointlessly pester them, badger and beleaguer them? How do we chafe our children? See, kids are extremely impressionable. We need to handle them with care and with sensitivity. When you approach your kids, make sure you're wearing kid gloves. This evening, I have a 12-point checklist that you can use to determine if you're guilty of provoking your children to wrath. Here are 12 parental mistakes to avoid. You should write them down. The first way to provoke a child is with negative comments. Negative comments. Comedian Joan Rivers used to open her routine with the joke, I knew I was an unwanted baby when I saw my bath toys were a toaster and a radio. It's sad, though, in real life when parents communicate to their child, either overtly or indirectly, that they're not wanted. You see, to God, there are no unwanted children. Every child is loved and desired by God. It grieves me whenever I hear a parent refer to a child as an accident. There are no accidents in God's plan. If you view your child as unwanted or as an accident, even if you never say it, trust me, they'll pick up on it in your attitude. Psalm 127, verse 3 tells us, behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is his reward. Happy is the man who has a quiver full of them. For me, a quiver full was always four. Someone once asked me to describe my kids. I said, well, the oldest, he's a quarterback. He's the on-field leader. Well, the girl, she's the cheerleader. She adds the spunk to the mix. The next is the running back. He's the bruiser. And then they would ask, well, what's number four? And I would reply, he's the end. Each of my four kids was a heritage, a reward in their own way. They've given us great happiness. Always see your kids as a blessing, not a burden. Once a Little League coach told me about a mom who pulled her son out of a game to go home early. The kid was due up to bat that inning. And if he left, it would cost the team an automatic out. Well, this coach explained the situation to this anxious mom, and he asked her to please let Billy stay just long enough to take his at bat. And as the mom walked off with her son in front of the other parents and all the players, she turned and she shouted, "Ah, Billy's no good. He'll make an out anyway. We've got to go." And tragically, she said it without thinking. You know, some parents make negative comments without any thought as to their impact. Their mouth goes on a shooting spree. Adults forget that kids are fragile. They're breakable. You don't toss bone china around the kitchen like you do paper plates. And you don't handle children like you would an adult. A child needs to be treated delicately and deliberately. Always handle your kids with kid gloves. And I understand, parents get tired. At times, your weariness can taint your attitude. We're tempted to view our children as a pest or as a nuisance or as a bother or as an interference to our other plans. Trust me, resist that temptation at all costs. It reminds me of the dad who brought his 4-year-old daughter to the hospital to meet her newborn brother. The sister looked at the baby through the nursery glass and noticed the identification bracelet around the baby's ankle. The little girl, she turned to her daddy and she asked him, "When are they going to take off his price tag?" You know, if you're a parent, you know having a baby is costly. And the financial expense is just the beginning. No, add in the love and the time and the energy and the effort that we invest. A lot goes into raising a child. Babies are very, very expensive, but they have no price tags. A baby is priceless. No value can be ascribed to a human life. An eternal soul created for God's pleasure is sitting in your high chair, never forget, or maybe in your driver's seat. Your child is a blessing. Well, a second way to provoke a child to wrath is with broken promises. See, a child hangs their hopes on a parent's words. Hey, make an idle promise that you don't fulfill, and it may not be a big deal to you, but it could crush your child. This was hammered home to me one day when I promised my 5-year-old son, Mac, that we would go to the ballpark and hit baseballs. But first, I needed to take care of a few issues at the church. Well, as usual, those few issues turned into 6 or 7 hours. When I finally got home, my 5-year-old was sitting on the porch with his glove and bat in hand. And we had a wonderful time at the ballpark, just as I had promised. But later that day, Kathy told me that Mac had been sitting on that front porch all day long. He had waited for me for 6 long hours. He had been fixated on my promise. See, to a child, a parent's words are power. Our children have total confidence in what we tell them. Here's their rationale. My parents brought me into the world, thus nothing is beyond the scope of their ability to do. That's why a parent needs to be careful with his or her promises. Don't disillusion or disappoint your child. Kids don't understand extenuating circumstances. Let me say it again. Kids don't understand our extenuating circumstances. The trust between a parent and a child should be considered sacred. Don't let anything violate that trust. You see, how can we expect our kids to receive the instruction that comes out of our mouth if they can't believe the promise that comes out of that same mouth? Be deliberate with what you promise, then be determined to follow through and keep that promise. Well, the third way to provoke a child to wrath is with deaf ears. How often do we fail to sit down and make the effort to listen to our children? Proverbs 20, verse 5 is a wonderful verse. It says, "Counsel in the heart of a man is like deep water, but a man of understanding will draw it out." All kinds of thoughts and feelings and fears are swimming about in your child's mind. Parent, he or she needs you to stop barking at them long enough to listen to them. How attentive are you? When Zach was 3 or 4 years old, he spent the night at his grandpa's house. They were playing cowboys. I mean, the toy guns were blazing. People were dropping like flies. Every time Zach got shot, he'd fall to the ground. His granddaddy would race over to the wounded cowboy, open up his shirt, make an incision, cut the bullet out, sew him back up. They'd start playing again. It may gross you out, but that's just the way my grandpa played. My dad played with my grandkid. Well, during the shootout, grandma suddenly walked by. She decided to get in on the action. So when Zach hit the floor, she jumped in. She opened up his shirt. She cut out the bullet. She sewed him back up. But rather than popping up to continue to play, Zach just laid there motionless on the floor. Finally, the little guy kind of groaned and he said, "But Grandma, there's only one problem. They shot me in the leg." See, lots of parents approach their kids with solutions without first listening and identifying the problem. University President James Angle explained his success. He said, "Grow antennae, not horns." And that's great advice for parents. Often a behavior that we would like to gore is really just a cry for help. We need to be sensitive and we need to listen. Well, the fourth way to needlessly needle a child is to play favorites. If one child senses that a parent loves another sibling more than him or her, it can produce a deep-seated resentment in the heart of that child that may one day erupt in rebellion. The classic case of this was Joseph. He was Jacob's favorite son. Jacob even gave Joseph a psychedelic leather jacket. But his brothers were jealous of the special treatment. Their jealousy was Jacob's fault. It was Dad's fault, but they took it out on Joseph. Remember, they feigned his death and they sold him as a slave to the Egyptians. Joseph was a victim of a father's favoritism. I have 3 sons and 1 daughter. And for some reason, my wife always thought I was tougher on my grimy, sweaty, gritty, gnarly, nappy, roughneck boys than I was on my sweet, adorable, precious, can-do-no-wrong princess. I didn't see it. But just to humor Kathy, I tried real hard to guard against any fatherly favoritism. Seriously, you may have a child whose interests and personality draw you to them. But work hard to make sure that you don't favor that child over your other children. Well, the fifth way to provoke a child is to force him or her to be something they're not. And oh my, while coaching Little League, over all the years that I coached, I saw this so often. A dogged dad trying to live out his failed ambitions through his son. It's so sad when you see it. Realize children don't enter this world a blank slate. Their genetic makeup predetermines a host of traits and talents and tendencies. Parents quickly recognize the influences of heredity when their child makes the honor roll, but we blame their environment when the same child has to stay after school for detention. Heredity is the reason 2 children born into the same family, trained by the same parents, subject to the same rules, can turn out so differently. Children are like snowflakes. No 2 kids are exactly alike. Thus, no single parenting style works for all children. Cookie-cutter approaches to parenting just don't work. See, Proverbs 22, verse 6 is the most quoted verse in the Bible for parents. But it's also the most misunderstood. Solomon tells us, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." Now, often when we read that verse, we emphasize the word way. Train up a child in the way he should go. As if there's a single best way to parent, and it's usually my way. But you see, in the Hebrew language, the emphasis is on the word he. Train up a child in the way he should go. Commentator Matthew Henry offers this translation of chapter 22, verse 6. He says, train up a child according to his capabilities. In short, tailor your training to the individual child. Adapt it to the child's interests and abilities and disposition and limitations. See, a wise parent discovers the talents and interests that God has hardwired into their child's heart. Then he or she encourages that child in that direction. If your child is an artist, don't try to force them to be an athlete. If he's a musician, don't try to make him a mechanic. Don't try to rewire your child. You might just blow a fuse. Well, the sixth way to provoke your child is to set impossible expectations. I am convinced that in today's world, we expect far too much from our children at too early of an age. Did you know that today there are triathlons for seven-year-olds? There are summer camps that teach kids about stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. Are you kidding? Kids no longer have time to be kids. At times, parents can expect a three-year-old to have the same attention span as an older sibling. Or they'll demand that a slower developing son bring home the same high grades as his studious sister. Sometimes we just expect too much. See, children burdened with impossible expectations end up burning out and giving up, all in an effort to please their parents. Jesus' words to the legalistic Pharisees also apply to some pushy parents. Matthew 23, verse 4. For they bind heavy burdens, hard to bear, and lay them on men's shoulders. Do that to your children, and you'll regret it. Maybe your child doesn't want to be a doctor. He might just want to be a carpenter. Jesus was a carpenter. Construction was good enough for God's son. Why not yours? See, too much pushing can harden a child's heart. Well, the seventh way to frustrate your child is to have no or low expectations. So your expectations can be too high, but they can also be too low or non-existent. You'll find that there are few kids who are self-motivated, but most children need some form of external motivation. Most kids need a gentle nudge forward from time to time. When faced with obstacles, it's our human tendency to opt for the path of least resistance. Too often, kids especially are quick to settle for less than their best. That's why children have to be taught that some obstacles shouldn't be bypassed. Some mountains need to be climbed. Some hurdles need to be jumped over. At times, a parent helps their child to stay with it. A parent needs to know when to prod on their kids. When Carol saw that her daughter's feet turned inward, that her toes pointed toward each other, she decided to do whatever it took to help her little girl. For 4 years, her daughter wore corrective shoes. By age 6, she was walking normally. But Carol wasn't satisfied with that. She wanted her daughter to participate in an activity that would force her to use her feet and legs and stretch their range of motion. The little girl chose ice skating. And so for the next 15 years, Carol carted her daughter to and from the rink. And that's why when Christy Yamaguchi climbed to the platform to receive her gold medal in figure skating at the 1992 Winter Olympics, she knew that her success could be traced back to her mom, Carol Yamaguchi. Carol was the mom who had dreamed for her little girl. See, all kids have dreams, but they've yet to learn that dreams come true through hard work and determination. See, it's a parent's job to teach their sons and daughters the value of persistence and patience and preparation to keep that apple out in front of them. Well, the eighth way to pester or hinder a child is to be overly critical. Sometimes a parent can lose perspective. We can focus on the C that they brought home rather than on the five A's. We can see the cup half empty rather than half full. Parents, do your kids see you as impossible to please? If so, you're provoking them to wrath. My youngest child struggled academically. After the successes of his three older siblings, his mother and I had to adjust our expectations. He had other gifts that were wonderful. He taught us a new slogan. Dad, Mom, don't forget, C's make degrees. We had to agree. A C will do. Never forget, a child craves their parents' approval. They thirst for it emotionally. They need it like water. And if a child doesn't get it from their parents, guess what? They'll get that approval elsewhere, from a boyfriend or from a peer group. Kids need parents to be cheerleaders, not critics. Well, the ninth way to provoke your child is through neglect. Never forget how kids spell love. You know how kids spell love? Anybody know how kids spell love? T-I-M-E. That's right. They spell it time. Child psychologist Kevin Lehman once wrote, "I hear parents talk about quality time, but in all my years of private practice, I have never heard a child mention the term. All a child knows is that he wants your time and attention, whether it's to watch him do somersaults and cartwheels or to take him for a Big Mac." Lehman concludes, "In trying to find time for your children, don't worry too much about how much quality is in it. Give them all the time you can, and the quality will take care of itself." I agree. Parents, you'll have the rest of your life to pursue your career ambitions. One day, it'll just be you and your spouse. You can travel the world, but you only have a few short years left to spend with your kids. Dad and Mom, whatever you do, whatever mistakes you make, don't neglect to spend time with your children. You provoke your kids if they never see you. I've observed that some parents act like their kid comes with a pause button. You ever met parents like this? That they can just push pause on their child's development while they go off and do their own thing? They're under the illusion that the opportunities will still be there when they get ready. Wow, are these parents in for a rude awakening. For parents, by the time you're ready, your child might no longer care. I love this quote by author Wade Horn. He said, "My father was a great dad. I didn't always think so, of course. When I was growing up, I mostly thought of him as an overbearing autocratic stick in the mud whose main mission in life was to make mine miserable. But I have since come to realize he had one great quality. He was there." Someone once said, 90% of life is just showing up. My dad showed up. See, I'm personally convinced that a father with faults is still better than a father who's absent. Just being there, Dad, goes a long, long way. See, the fact I was part of my daughter's life and I was there to answer the door when that boy came to pick her up on a date, I'm sure kept certain boys away. They didn't want to go through that experience. If I was home, wild parties had a hard time breaking out. Certainly, my kids were able to sneak off and do something behind my back, but that was just the point. They had to sneak off because my wife and I were around. Just being there matters far more than you can ever think. And while I'm on the subject of parental neglect, let me mention another form of neglect that I think is especially lethal. We talked about it a little bit the other night. And that's the spiritual neglect of our children. I know parents today have their kids in sports and music and art and all kinds of extracurricular activities. And that's fine. But they make a mistake. They leave church out. Parents who neglect their children's spiritual training make a crucial mistake. As long as my kids were living under my roof and out of my checkbook, they were going to go to church with us on Sundays. You know, here at Calvary Chapel, I hope you know, we work hard to make church fun and exciting for our kids. And that's why nothing bothers me more than when I hear a parent say, "Well, my kids just didn't want to come to church today, so I left them at home." What if they said that about school on Monday morning? You'd make them go to school because they need it. And you would even require them to like it. And this is the attitude we need to take toward our kids' spiritual training. They need their parents' insistence. You know, with four kids, we did it all. Soccer and baseball and football and cheerleading and basketball and dance and baton and softball and roller hockey. You name it, the Addams Family did it. And we saw great value in our kids' participation to a point. But we also realized that you can invest thousands of hours sharpening your kid's batting skills or making sure that he can dribble a soccer ball or that she can do a back handspring. I can't tell you how much money I spent into her doing a back handspring, and she was never able to do it. Yet when they reach adulthood, their athletic skills won't be nearly as important as the strength of their faith and their knowledge of God. This is why it's crucial that with everything else we do for our kids, we bring them to church. Together as a family, grow in Christ, learn God's word, apply it to your life, make your child's spiritual training a priority for them and for you. Well, the 10th way to frustrate your kids is the failure to discipline them. If you let your kids walk all over you, or just brush them off or ignore your rules, if you cave in to their manipulations and threats, you will be provoking them. It's been said, kids will forgive you for your mistakes, but your weakness will send them elsewhere for strength. Now, I'm going to say that one more time. It's so important. Kids will forgive you for your mistakes, but your weakness will send them elsewhere for strength. I'll never forget the night I was putting the kids to bed. Nick was just 3 at the time, and I had just gotten comfortable. Put them all in bed, tucked them in, prayed with them, shut the door. And I'd just gotten comfortable in the lazy boy when he comes parading through the room. I said, "Son, what in the world are you doing out of bed?" He turned to me, looked at me with this defiant look on his face, and he said, "Dad, mind your own business." And then he kept walking. Hey, trust me, I proceeded to show my son exactly what my business was. It's a parent's business to discipline their kids. Children will respect their parents only if their parents calmly but firmly stand up to them. If you cave in to a child's demands because you're afraid of a fight, or that you just want the conflict, or the friction scares you, you're making a huge mistake. Though they might never admit it, kids desire a parent's discipline. See, boundaries, the boundaries you set, are what give your children a sense of security. They need it even when they don't realize it. When you give them those boundaries, they know that you care. When you don't, they think nobody cares. Never forget the high priest Eli. 1 Samuel 3, verse 13 tells us he was judged by God. And why? Because his sons made themselves vile and he did not restrain them. Perhaps he thought that if he came down too hard on his sons, he might lose them. Well, just the opposite occurred. Because he didn't restrain them, he lost them. Eli allowed his son's rebellion to go unchecked, and God judged him. Well, the 11th way to provoke a child to anger is to set a double standard. See, kids have a sixth sense. They have what I call a baloney meter. They can detect hypocrisy and duplicity a mile away. And they get seriously turned off when a parent doesn't practice what he or she preaches, especially when they become teenagers. Parent, if you want credibility with your child, if you want their respect, then you need to live worthy of their respect. See, you can tell your kids to stay off drugs until you're blue in the face, But if you abuse alcohol, they'll ask you, what's the difference? Don't ground your kid for cheating on a test if you've got a radar detector mounted on your dashboard. Don't set a double standard. If you want your kid to listen to what you have to say, nothing will impress them more than your own humility and sincerity and genuineness. Don't expect your kids to embrace values to which you only pay lip service. Here's a poem. It's entitled A Better Way. It was written by Edward Guest, but it could have been written by your own child. I'd rather see a sermon than hear one any day. I'd rather one should walk with me than merely show the way. The eye's a better pupil and more willing than the ear. Fine counsel is confusing, but example's always clear. And the best of all the preachers are the men who live their creeds. For to see the good in action is what everybody needs. I can soon learn how to do it if you'll let me see it done. I can watch your hands in action, but your tongue too fast may run. And the lectures you deliver may be very wise and true, but I'd rather get my lesson by observing what you do. For I may misunderstand you and the good advice you give, but there's no misunderstanding how you act and how you live. Well, finally, the 12th way for a parent to provoke their child to anger is to be overprotective. You know, the goal of parenthood is to work yourself out of a job. We expect a child to need us at 7 years old, even at 17. But if that child is still dependent on you at 27, something went wrong. With my fourth child, by that time, it had become customary for the dad to cut the umbilical cord. Some of you guys had that privilege with all your kids. First three, you didn't do it, but the fourth one, I got to do it. And I'll never forget the privilege of cutting that umbilical cord. I picked up those scissors, and I snipped the prenatal connection between my child and his mother. And it was a profound moment for me. For in a sense, from that very moment, my son has been on his own, in a sense. Oh, yeah, his parents were there, were and are around to help him. But he was unleashed that day to live his own life. And it suddenly became our job to wean him away and to grow him up and to teach him to make his own decisions, solve his own problems, develop his own skills and thoughts and convictions and ambitions. And this is where a parent's faith kicks in. The overprotective parent who smothers a child and is afraid to let that child brush up against the real world suffers from a lack of faith. Oh, I'm aware of the dangers that are out there. Hey, I know the risks, but there's also the risk of holding on for too long. At some point, parent, you got to turn loose. In August 1988, my first son, Zach, enrolled in kindergarten. On the first day of kindergarten, Kathy dressed him up, put a smile on his face, on her face, took him to the school, handed him over to the teacher. And then she went home and cried for the 3 hours until it was time to pick him up. It was the first of many steps in the process of letting go. It was a little over 26 years later, on December the 13th, 2014, that our last child, Mac, walked the aisle to receive his college diploma. And in between Zach's first day of school and Mac's last day of school, there were lots and lots of letting go experiences. Actually, I don't like the phrase letting go. It's not really accurate. For we're not letting go, we're turning over. For every time I've let go, I've had to trust God that He would be there when I couldn't be. That He would do what I can no longer do. Psalm 127, verse 1 is true for us all. Unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain who build it. See, that's why I say there are no super parents. The only super parent is God. And ultimately, we're trusting our children to Him. We all should be like Hannah, who brought her son Samuel to the tabernacle and turned him over to the high priest. That's what God wants us to do figuratively. God desires of us a selfless act. We turn our children over to Him and trust Him with their welfare and safety. He gives us our kids. We do all we can to teach them obedience and respect, and then we give them back to Him. Let me close tonight with Psalm 127, verses 3 and 4. Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are the children of one's youth. At the time Psalm 127 was written, archery was a new invention in the science of weaponry. Prior to its utilization, soldiers fought hand to hand, face to face. But now, with the introduction of the bow and arrow, a soldier could strike a target at a distance without personally encountering and engaging the enemy. And this is a father's desire for his kids, to send them on ahead of him, to help them go where he can't travel, to accomplish more than his hands will ever do. It's been said, every parent is a Moses. We're preparing our children for a world we will not enter ourselves. We see the promised land, but we won't enter it. Our children will. Years ago, a dad at the ballpark, he asked me, he said, Sandy, he said, don't you hope your kids will turn out like you? I replied, I said, man, if my kids only turn out to be as good as me, I'll be disappointed. I'm praying they turn out far better than me. I want my kids to sail farther, and go higher, and move straighter than their dad. I'm just the archer, and it's up to me to set the arrow on course so that it'll strike its intended target. So let me state it one final time. A parent's purpose is to teach their children obedience and respect. And they do it with two tools, with training or discipline, and with admonition or encouragement. All the while, they are avoiding provoking their children to wrath. And as we've noted before, God's power always accompanies God's purpose. Tonight, I want us to pray for that power.